You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Moeller, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Wheaton at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit IssuesETC.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago.
And it's my honor to introduce to the country a daughter of former public school teachers, a proven consensus builder, an accomplished lawyer, a distinguished jurist, one of the nation's most prestigious courts. My nominee for the United States Supreme Court is Judge Ketanji Jackson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I am truly humbled by the extraordinary honor of this nomination, and I am especially grateful for the care that you have taken in discharging your constitutional duty in service of our democracy with all that is going on in the world today.
That's President Joe Biden announcing Friday his nominee for the Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson. What is her judicial philosophy? Her time on the D.C. court has been relatively short, and I believe she was a public defender before that. So what does that mean for the issues that will swirl around her nomination hearing? Many expect it will be rather quiet. Some say maybe even a little bipartisan when she is confirmed. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about the judicial philosophy of Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson, Ed Whalen. He's Distinguished Senior Fellow and Antonin Scalia Chair in Constitutional Studies for the Ethics and Public Policy Center based in Washington, D.C., a former law clerk to Justice Scalia, and author of the book The Essential Scalia on the Constitution, the Courts, and the Rule of Law. Ed, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
What do you make of President Biden's decision, taken some time back, to limit the pool of possible nominees to black women?
Well, he made this decision during the campaign in order to win the primary. It was very much a political commitment. And as with most things with go with the courts, if you get too political, I think it creates problems. So look, there's no doubt that there are many highly qualified black women who should be considered along with everyone else for a nomination. But I think that his commitment to look only to a certain small group of people was properly viewed negatively by lots of people.
During his time on the Senate Judiciary Committee, how did Biden deal with originalist nominees that came before him?
Well, Joe Biden was as partisan as they come. Way back in 1987, months before Bob Bork was nominated to the vacancy then, Joe Biden said that if Bork were nominated, of course, he'd have to support him. But next thing you know, the left-wing groups came down on Biden and he caved and, of course, led the effort against Judge Bork. Back in 2005, Joe Biden actually came out against possibly the first African-American Supreme Court nominee. He said that if President Bush nominated Janice Rogers Brown, a D.C. Circuit judge, to the Supreme Court vacancy, Democrats should filibuster her. So he talks a good game and often smiles a lot for the cameras, but he's, again, been very much a cause of the deep partisanship on this issue.
How do you think the announcement of Justice Breyer's retirement was handled?
Well, I'd love to learn the inside story. It sure seems that the White House botched it. From Justice Breyer's reaction, it appears that he thought he was doing the White House a favor, where they would have a long time to figure out whom they were going to nominate. Basically, he'd come back and announce his resignation, and they would promptly announce their nominee, not have this period that we had of basically a month where candidates were out there being debated publicly. I'd love to hear what the inside story is, but it sure seems like a botch.
So what do we know about Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's judicial track record on abortion, gay marriage, religious liberty?
Well, there's very little that we know on the specifics. I don't have in mind any cases that she's had exactly on those matters. She did work on an amicus brief, I believe it was, in an abortion case on the pro-abortion side, involving some sort of buffer zone, I believe it was, around abortion clinics. Look, Ketanji Brown Jackson, for whom I have a lot of admiration for many of her personal qualities, but she's been steeped in the progressive judicial approach of the left. And there's no reason to think that she's going to part company with the left on any big issue.
You recently wrote, Biden has already demonstrated that differences in judicial philosophy justify efforts to oppose the confirmation of the first female African-American justice. What do you mean by that, Ed?
Well, I was referring back to his opposition to Janice Rogers Brown in 2005. Obviously, his primary ground of opposition to her was her judicial philosophy, and the fact that she was and is an African-American woman did not overcome that, and indeed, in his view, it may well have exacerbated it. But for the same reasons that he opposed Janice Rogers Brown, it's perfectly proper for Republican senators to assess the judicial philosophy of Ketanji Brown Jackson, and if they find it wanting, to oppose her.
Ed Whelan is our guest. We're talking about the judicial philosophy of President Biden's new Supreme Court nominee, Ketanji Brown Jackson. On the other side, how did then Senator Biden treat the second black male Supreme Court nominee back in the day?
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the judicial philosophy of Ketanji Brown Jackson, President Biden's Supreme Court nominee. Ed Whelan is our guest, Antonin Scalia Chair in Constitutional Studies for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. In about 10 minutes, we'll discuss critical race theory versus the Ten Commandments in natural law with Pastor Peter Bender. Ed, talking about Biden as part of the Senate Judiciary Committee, how did then Senator Biden treat the second black male Supreme Court nominee?
Well, you're referring, of course, to Clarence Thomas's hearing, or high-tech lynching, as he called it, back in 1991. You know, Joe Biden can very much let the left dictate what he was doing, even as they're unhappy with certain aspects of it. But it was a hearing conducted in a very shoddy way, in a way that I think did a lot of unfair damage. And it was a sorry spectacle.
You have written extensively about the late Justice Antonin Scalia. How would you contrast his judicial philosophy with that of Judge Jackson?
Well, Justice Scalia was a leading advocate of what's been called public meaning originalism in the constitutional arena. Basically, that the task of justices is to discern and apply the original meaning of provisions of the Constitution, what they meant at the time they were adopted, not to impose their own moral or policy preferences onto those provisions. And likewise, in the statutory arena, the closely related, if not identical, interpretive doctrine of textualism. We look to discern what the text meant when it was adopted, not to try to figure out, oh, what did the legislators probably mean, even if they didn't say it, or how do we think we can advance their purpose. Judge Jackson has no discernible philosophy, which, of course, is true generally of the progressives. There's nothing you can. It's impossible to say, for example, that any opinion that Justice Ginsburg ever wrote was incompatible with her constitutional philosophy, because that philosophy itself was so malleable that it could mean anything at any time. So Justice Scalia liked to say originalism wins the battle because there's no alternative. There's no competitor that has a claim to a coherent approach where you can actually say, aha, this is the result that follows from these principles. So I haven't seen, you know, I've read a significant number of Judge Jackson's opinions. She, of course, has been mostly a district judge until a year ago. She had 8 years or so of district court opinions. And as you'd expect with any district judge, a lot of those are simply applying existing law. trying to make sense of existing precedents. So there's not a whole lot to discern of a judicial philosophy, but I'd be surprised if we see anything more than the usual progressive verbiage about living constitution and pragmatism and so on.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is quoted by CBS News saying, "I voted against confirming Judge Jackson to her current position less than a year ago. Since then, I understand that she has published a total of two opinions, both in the last few weeks, and that one of her prior rulings was just reversed by a unanimous panel of her present colleagues on the D.C. Circuit." How do you understand McConnell's particular concern there?
Well, look, I think he's saying, I voted against her a year ago. There's been nothing since then that ought to change my view, especially as she's now being nominated to a higher court. So, yeah, I think he's stating forthrightly his starting position is that if he thought she was shouldn't be confirmed to the D.C. Circuit, what's changed in the meantime such that he should think that she should be confirmed to the Supreme Court?
Do you think that Judge Jackson's nomination is likely to receive at least nominal bipartisan support?
I think there's a good chance that she will get more than the 50 Democratic votes in the Senate, maybe one or two or a small handful. And look, I think it's likely that she'll be confirmed with or without those votes. So, look, senators decide how to vote on these things based on broader considerations, including what they perceive their constituents want. So we have, there were three senators who voted for her confirmation to the D.C. Circuit a year ago. That's Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Lindsey Graham. I'm not saying that all three will vote for her this time, but it wouldn't be a surprise if at least two of them did.
You say that Judge Jackson's hearing is likely to be more quiet than recent Supreme Court nominee hearings. Why is that?
Well, I think for starters, if you look back over the last three or four decades of hearings, you see that Republican senators have not tried to go in the gutter on Supreme Court nominees. They've tried to keep the focus on judicial philosophy, and that makes for a quieter hearing. Look, the media is going to be all with Judge Jackson. Again, she's very appealing in lots of ways. So I don't think there'll be lots of fireworks. The Democrats apparently have the votes they need to confirm her. Everyone perceives it that way now. You know, this is not going to be a transformational vote on the Supreme Court. So I think that Republican senators will look to make the fight on judicial philosophy, look to justify the no votes that many of them will cast, but are not going to be casting aspersions on Judge Jackson as a person.
Finally, Judge Jackson would also be the second youngest justice next to Justice Barrett. Is that significant?
Well, it's significant in the sense that you have presidents, I think, looking for Supreme Court nominees who are ever younger. Ketanji Brown Jackson is right in the range of many Supreme Court nominees. There's nothing unusual about her age. That said, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, I believe, 60 or so when she was nominated back in 1993. And if I could do the math quickly on Justice Breyer, I think he was 56 or so back then. So there is a tendency on both sides, I'll add, to look to younger and younger justices in order to get a longer and longer tenure from the justices who are appointed.
Ed Whalen is Distinguished Senior Fellow and Antonin Scalia Chair in Constitutional Studies for the Ethics and Public Policy Center based in Washington, D.C. He's a former law clerk for Justice Scalia and author of the book The Essential Scalia on the Constitution, the Courts, and the Rule of Law. You'll find a link to this book and to the Ethics and Public Policy Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Ed, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We continue our series on the St. Peter option with Pastor Peter Bender. After this, we'll talk about critical race theory versus the Ten Commandments and natural law. You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Mohler, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Wheaton at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.